In this podcast episode, we want to introduce you to our BCEN friend, Joe Hill. Come along as Michael Dexter and Holly Briggs talk with Joe about his career in emergency and flight nursing. From his initial why to why he stayed in this profession for over 25 years, this episode is sure to help us all find a place to land. This episode is called Setting Up an LZ in Primary Care.
Hello, and welcome to the BCN and Friends podcast, where we hold interesting conversations about learning with a range of thought leaders, BCN certification holders, and industry professionals. But most importantly, to create value and insight for you, our professional nurses across the emergency spectrum. We hope you find our discussions interesting, informative, sometimes funny, sometimes serious, and always valuable. I'm Holly Briggs, a professional development specialist at BCEN and one of your hosts for today. I'm joined by my co-host, Michael Dexter, Director of Professional Development at BCEN. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Holly.
It's great to have you with us. In this episode of BCEN and Friends, we have Joe Hill. Joe has been a nurse for over 25 years and recently made the transition from acute care, flight, and emergency medicine to primary care. He is finding the impact worth all of the challenge. Michael, could you please introduce us to our BCN friend, Joe?
Yeah, absolutely. Joe started his career at a level one adult pediatric trauma center and then moved into critical care ground transport. He decided to make the jump into flight medicine, where he stayed for 19 years, serving as flight nurse and clinical director. And in 2021, Joe finished his master's degree as an advanced practice nurse. In March 2023, Joe began working as a family nurse practitioner. So even though the learning curve was a bit higher than initially expected, Joe is finding he can make a significant difference in emergency needs of patients through his new role in primary care. Joe, welcome to the BCN and Friends podcast. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you all for having me on. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to meet you and talk with you, and wanted to know a little bit more about your nursing career in general, and then maybe dive into some nurse practitioner related questions. But just going back, was it always emergency medicine? What was the draw to nursing in general? And then tell us a little bit about the transition into flight nursing.
So I got into nursing probably for the wrong reasons. I got into it initially, to be honest, for money, because it was, I knew there was an opportunity to go and get a 2-year degree, get out quickly, be in the field and be able to make kind of what I thought was quick money. But I ended up staying in it for the right reasons, I think. I stayed in it because I enjoyed taking care of patients, the team environment, the emergency side of patient care. I think that was always the appeal to me. I started out at University of Kentucky in a level one trauma center. And at the time, they did pediatric and adults in the same ER. And at that point, we were one of only two level one trauma centers in the state. So you got a lot of high acuity, high volume patients constantly coming through the door. And then air medical was really introduced in the state a few years after I was in the ER. And once I saw that, I was like, oh, yeah, that's the next step right there. I got to get to that. So that's what I did. I started working ground critical care. I worked my way up to becoming a flight nurse, and then kind of went through the ranks of a flight nurse, base lead, a clinical manager, then on to be a clinical director for several years. So I spent the majority of my career in some role of flight medicine. So a few years ago, I had always wanted to get my master's. I decided it's finally time to go back and get my master's degree. I honestly didn't plan to leave emergency medicine at that time. So my goal was to get my family nurse practitioner. I would still be able to work in the ER, and then that would be it. That would be kind of what I did. But when I started doing my clinicals in family practice, something changed. And there was an appeal there for me that I didn't expect. And that's what I went back into. I'm still kind of surprised that that's what I do every day. And at some point, I'll probably branch off and do a bit of emergency medicine. But family practice has been kind of a different beast for me. It's seeing patients on that side, not in the ER, not in a, in a helicopter, and not in a critical phase, is very different. But you see the patients that are hypertensive, they're diabetic. I mean, I live in Kentucky, so everybody's has comorbidities and COPD. And it's interesting to see the before the hospital phase of these patients and try to prevent them from being in the hospital. Not to say we don't still get a mix of patients that walk through the door that are having an MI or a stroke or some other severe symptoms that we have to send out. But it's a very different piece of medicine that I didn't expect.
I wanted to go back before we jump into some more nurse practitioner related. I wanted to go back to flight nursing and just ask you another question about that, because there's a lot of nurses that go into nursing to be a flight nurse. What was it about flight nursing that made you stay in that particular role for as long as you did? What was the draw and appeal there versus some of the other areas that you'd worked?
You know, a good question. And I enjoyed it. I mean, I think the care that you provide in the pre-hospital world is so different than what you did in the ER. I mean, for a nurse, the autonomy is so different. Yeah, I think the paramedics were always kind of used to that because they worked independently out in the field. But as a nurse, that's a very different environment for you. And I think that was part of the appeal is you get to make the decisions on what are we going to give this patient to intubate him? How do we treat their blood pressure? You know, are we going to anticoagulate this patient? Are we going to let him ride? Or what the decisions are getting to the hospital. And I think that's what kind of appealed to me. Plus, you're taking care of patients that are very complex, high acuity, obviously. And it takes a different skill set to be able to do that. And again, it's one of those things that you're always training, you're always learning. You can never do enough practice intubations. You can never look back through your protocols and your guidelines enough and remember that stuff enough, because you never know what's going to come through the door or that you're going to get toned out for. So there's an obvious appeal to that. The industry has grown extensively since I started. I mean, I remember when I first started, I think there was maybe 10 aircraft in the state, and now there's 26 or 27. I'd have to sit down and count them, to be honest. But it's grown so much over that expanse of time. But at the core, I think it's still the same. You're still taking care of the same patients, the same gunshots, the same car accidents, the same MIs.
That's very interesting to hear the autonomy and kind of being able to work in a different way as a nurse was what appealed to you in flight nursing. And then to see and kind of know that you then transition to an advanced practice nurse, family nurse practitioner, where again, the autonomy is easy to see, like, okay, so he's flight nurse, now he's doing this nurse practitioner role. But the setting is very different for you now. And one thing you didn't really mention yet is that you serve a very underserved patient population in Kentucky.
Right.
So these are people maybe who don't have the resources, maybe don't have the education to really address their healthcare needs. And now that's who you're working with. So quite a different population. What do you feel was maybe the biggest challenge for you coming from your flight and emergency background, biggest kind of shift for you in practice, but then also what have you found just to be the most rewarding part of what you are doing now?
Good question. So the autonomy is a bit different, I'll say. I really went into that thinking, I've been in flight medicine for a long time. This is going to be easy. This is not going to be that tough to go into family medicine, because how hard could that be? Man, was I wrong. I got humbled so many times when a patient sits down with a list of 20 medicines and says, one of these is making me dizzy. And you're like, oh my God, I'm like, I don't even know what these are. So there were so many times that I got taken back to school and had to go back and relearn something that either I had forgotten or just really didn't know before. So you have autonomy as a flight nurse, but the autonomy you have as a nurse practitioner, where you're the guy making the decision. I decide if you're going to be on a beta blocker or calcium channel blocker or whatever, and I have to justify why I did that. And what reasons I'm putting you on those medicines. It's very different. The accountability is similar, but at the end of the day, it's still a bit different. That took me for a ride a few times. So the first time you sit down in a room with a patient, you're like, oh man, this is my patient, and I have to decide their course and impact their healthcare, potentially their lives. It's a bit more daunting than I expected. I will say it's very rewarding. It's more of a challenge to meet some of the needs of the patients than I expected. I had never had to make calls to try to find patients' medications that they could afford. I can't tell you the number of times that I get a call back from the pharmacy and they're like, the patient can't afford it, so pick something else. And there's several times it's like, I'm at the end of the list. I don't know what other medicine I'm going to put this guy on. So you end up having to call other resources to try to pay for medications, or you end up calling the actual manufacturers and try to get some programs or some waivers for the patients. That part of it is a different challenge. Thankfully, I work with a team of nurses and referral folks and some other people that are really good at that, because I'm not. That's not something that's in my wheelhouse that I'd ever done before, and certainly not my expertise. And I can tell you, my nurse Kathy, who hopefully will listen to this about 10 times a day, she's like, you can't do that. That's wrong. There's so many things that I didn't know going into this that I get to learn again. But the good thing is that the care part of it, I feel more and more comfortable with. Certainly when we get the patients in that have a kind of a crazy EKG or some other odd symptoms, I hate to say I'm tickled to death, but I'm like, oh, I got this. This I can do. This I can figure out. So yeah. Oh, he's an AFib. Awesome. Yeah. I'll take him. That's my guy. So those kinds of patients I'm so comfortable with. But if it's an urgent care thing, if it's draining something, sewing something, whatever, I'm like, oh yeah, that's it. I can do those things. Those are easy. I'll take that. You take the guy with a disease I haven't heard of except one time in school. So the good thing is, I have to say, flight medicine truly prepares you for a lot, as does emergency medicine. You see so many different things that the big things I'm comfortable with. I mean, if somebody truly comes in with an acute emergency, and the clinics I work in are in counties without hospitals, so it's not unusual for us to get someone that does show up that's short of breath. I've had patients have MIs sitting in the chair in the lobby. Those patients I'm very comfortable with. It's the other set of patients, the other 85% of the patients I see, that I had to relearn what to do.
Well, I think it's important to also point out that at one point you weren't comfortable with the patients with the MIs and the traumas and the gunshot wounds, and
Oh,
you
yeah.
obviously took the time to educate yourself and to be around others that helped educate you. And you mentioned that in your current role, there's patients that take you back to school and humble you and things like that. But I'm quite confident through the work that you've done, and I know you're confident as well, that as you progress in this role, it'll continue to build more familiarity and more confidence in that. And one of the things that you were a part of, and I believe are still a part of, was work with the Air Surface Transport Nurses Association. And I think a lot of that probably prepped you for the comfort level that you felt in that industry. And you were involved in chapter writing and review, and you did research projects and just a lot of different continuing education. And I'm sure that you're doing other things now that you're a nurse practitioner. How do you see the value of that continuing education, both personally and when it comes to care of patients?
Good question. And I think I said it before that for me, every day is a school day. Every day there's something I take away that I didn't know before or had to go back and relearn. And as you all know, you're both in medicine, it changes so much. I mean, there's been times when I would look up a protocol or a standard. I had a pneumonia patient not too long ago, and I thought, well, I'll just look it up real quick just to see, just to make sure it's still this medicine or whatever. Some have done it, but it hadn't changed. I mean, I looked at it 2 months ago, and within that time frame, the recommendations have shifted. So I went to some of my colleagues and I'm like, have y'all read this? Did y'all see this? And they're like, no, we had no idea. And without looking, without wanting to know if you're doing the right thing, nobody would have known. And I think that's kind of true in a lot of medicines. Nobody comes and feeds you research articles and says, read this chapter and learn this. You got to seek that. You got to hunt that down and do that on your own. I've had the privilege of doing some article writing, some chapter writing, and thanks to the wonderful Dr. McLean, some research projects. She kind of helped pull me through some of that extensive learning process for me. If you've never done true research before, very complex. It makes you appreciate the end product. I think I'm like most people when I see a good title, I go, oh, that's awesome. Let's read the conclusion. And that's only such a small piece of it. And I'm still guilty of doing that. Even after working a couple years on some of the projects, I'm still guilty of pulling that out and being like, oh, let's look at the conclusion, but now I'm a little bit more detailed and going back and like, all right, let's look at the data. Let's look at how they actually pulled this out. How many people were actually in the study? Oh, there's only 50. Well, never mind. It's probably not that valid. So let's look at something different. But yeah, there's a lot to be gained from that. And I think as a clinician, you have to always be in learning mode. You have to always be willing to do the next thing, learn the next thing. Some people are kind of comfortable with the status quo, but that was just never me. I always wanted to do something different, do something more. And I've still got some more tricks up my sleeve. I've still got some ideas that I'm still kind of exploring and working on and trying to grow in my new role and do a few more things.
That's awesome to hear. I love your saying, like, every day is a school day. And I know for myself, in the beginning of my career in emergency nursing, I had a great educator. And I'll be honest, I was a baby nurse. And so I had this educator, and for lack of better terms, they basically spoon-fed me, right? Like, I wasn't out there seeking this information. They would like bring it to me
Right.
and they'd be like, oh, here you go. This is what you need to know. You need to learn that. So I had someone who was bringing that education to me and force feeding me. But that educator moved on and that role wasn't filled for a while. And what I realized is I don't have someone here doing that. And if I don't make the effort to go and seek new knowledge, to go and read articles, to get involved, to up my game as far as the things that I am researching, then no one's going to do it for me. I was really lucky, really blessed to have that in the beginning of my career, but like that's not the norm. And it certainly wasn't going to be the norm for the rest of my career. So it definitely pushed some independence and like, hey, I got to get out. I have to do this for myself. I have to take ownership and accountability for the practice that I have. And yes, do I like to read research articles? Absolutely. Do I often find myself looking at the title and the conclusion? 100%. I think
Exactly.
everyone listening to this podcast is like, I feel like they're talking to me. And the truth is, we all are. We're all guilty of that.
Right.
I love that idea that every day I should be learning something new. And if I'm not, then it's shame on me. It's not shame on everybody else. It's shame on me for not taking that next step. So, man, that'll teach right there. So, all right. I know a little something about you, and that's that you're a big proponent of podcasts. Over the last 15 years, podcasts have been a thing for you. You were a co-host, actually, on the Amped podcast for Air Methods. You did 30 episodes with them. So this is by far a platform you're very familiar with. What value did you find in creating that kind of content? And then my follow-up question for that is, did you have a favorite episode that you did or a guest that was just like so memorable, you're going to tuck that away forever?
I'll have to think about a favorite episode, but we started the podcast, Dr. Phil Moy, Dr. John Wilmus, and I, really to kind of tell the story of Air Medical, because I think that was somewhat missing. And what we did, we had meetings where each month we would have case review and we would talk through different flights and things that the crews had done. And some of those were just short of miraculous. I mean, the decision making, the teamwork, and just the dynamics that the crew could demonstrate out in the field in the middle of nowhere with limited resources is it's impressive. And I think being able to share that story, not only from the clinician standpoint, at times from the patient standpoint, from the pre-hospital crews, we would pull them into the interviews. On the receiving end, there's times where we had toxicologists and cardiologists and other specialists come in and say, in that situation, this is what you should do or this is what you shouldn't do. I mean, we tried to give the full envelope of what takes place, not only pre-hospital, but kind of after the story, so to speak. I mean, there's several times we had the actual patients on there, one of which was one of the more recent episodes was actually a flight clinician that went into cardiac arrest at a base and was flown, and they had the opportunity to interview him. I mean, obviously he survived, did very well, was able to be interviewed for the podcast and talk about his experience. And that perspective is not the piece that you hear very much. If you see the news, somebody lands in a helicopter, somebody was sick and they take off and that's kind of it. But you don't get that the rest of the story. And I think being able to hear some of those pieces really highlights what air medicine is and the service that the clinicians provide as well. So it was a great opportunity to be able to do that. As far as best episodes, I don't know. The first one we did, the very first one, was a patient that had gotten Reboa. And I don't know if it was the first aramedical Reboa in the US, but it had to be early. It was a patient that was, I won't say we were winging it, but it was kind of, this is the only chance this guy has of getting to the receiving center is if you all fly him, even though he's got Reboa. And if you don't know what Reboa is, go back and listen to the episode because we talk all about it. But it's pretty amazing. But again, it was one of those that you got to think outside the box. You got to pull in your resources. They had medical directors on the phone, and obviously the trauma surgeon there at the referring center was willing to do all this. So it's those types of things where you have to go off of the script, so to speak, that are pretty impressive. I mean, there's some other stories that were, pretty incredible. One of them was a guy who had lost his family in an accident and actually came on to speak to us about some of the mistakes that were made, not by air medical crew, but she was given the wrong medications and actually ended up expiring in the hospital. So there's a few episodes like that that are just, unbelievable to hear someone's perspective and that side of story. So worth some listens, that's for sure. I mean, it's good to be able to, kind of share what's been happening all along, but just no one heard the stories.
Yeah, it makes me want to go listen to it as well. And you're right, not very many have even flown Reboa ever. And to have one of the first ones is cool. And I did want to ask you about really just your passion for emergency care and your passion for nursing in general. One of the things that we like to ask everybody on the podcast is, was there a certain moment or a time in your career that impacted you? And whether it's a person or a patient encounter or family member or something that maybe impacted your career. But before I turn it back over to you, I have one little caveat. And I hate making generalized statements, but I will say that a lot of people I've met that go into nursing for the money are not often driven to just to learn more and to be dedicated to learning. Not all, but many. But you're clearly driven, and you talk about every day being a day of education. So, in asking you that question about was there a particular time or a person that impacted you, you changed from being driven towards the money towards driven towards patient care and optimal outcomes. Was it a person that changed you? Was it a patient that changed you? I am curious to know what caused the change.
Well, this is going to make me sound so old, and I hate that so much. But I say I got in it for the money. When I started as a nurse in a level one trauma center, I was making 13 bucks an hour. So to say I got in it for the money really does not sound like I had much sense at all. I worked as a tech in an ER, and there was something about the ER environment that just got me. That's what captured me and made me want to continue being in a nursing role. And I wanted to do it at the highest level I could, which again was at a trauma center. And I think both of you worked at trauma centers and know what it's like to be in there. So again, I went into it thinking, oh man, I can make some money. But once I got in there, I'm like, yeah, this it ain't about the money. To be able to help someone, to care for someone, to see the reaction of a family member that you've helped, their loved one, that's the impact right there. If all you want to do is make the money, you can see it on the patient. You can see it on the staff. I guarantee everybody that's listened to this has worked with somebody that you can tell is just in it to make the bucks. And that the drive, the compassion is just not there. And I hate to say it, but it's true, especially in the nursing industry has struggled for many years of staffing and things like that. But it's exhausting. It will burn you out, but you can tell who that. You can tell when someone just doesn't have that motivation and that drive. At one point, I was probably like that too. I think all of us have hit that spell where we're like, I'm just done. I'm just cooked. I don't want to go another day. I don't want to work another day. But you go in and something happens and you just, there's a little spark of motivation that kind of hits you again. I was blessed to have, like Holly said, I had some great preceptors coming up, or I probably wouldn't be where I'm at now. It was them that motivated me, guided me, pushed me in the right directions. It was those folks that kind of helped keep me in the straight and narrow. And thankfully, I've carried that forward. As far as patients and things that have impacted me, you think back through your career and how many patients you've seen. There's a lot of stories of patients that you remember and that you'll never forget. Some of them for good reasons, and some of them because you hate to say it, but it's tough cases, bad outcomes, something like that kind of haunts you that, that you couldn't get paid enough to have lived through some of the experiences that nurses, paramedics, and physicians have to live through. So, there's a lot. I mean, having this success stories, having patients that you see later on that recover from an accident or from an MI or stroke and are able to live their lives, and that's always impactful. That's the part that you didn't get much in emergency medicine. You didn't see that back end of it. You didn't see that they went to rehab for 6 months, that they were inpatient ICU for 3 months. That's the part that you never saw. You shipped them off to the ICU. Sorry, ICU nurse, here you go. Good luck for the next 3 months because this is going to be your patient while we get somebody else in. So that's the part that you didn't see that I is underappreciated, that kind of full gamut of medicine that you don't always see. And the lonely family nurse practitioner out there that's trying to keep your patient's blood pressure good so they don't get back in the hospital. Yeah, that's me now. So
Hey,
be good to those
we
people.
appreciate you, Joe Hill, the lonely family nurse practitioner.
That's it. That's it.
No, I think in saying that, and it's definitely not in a negative connotation, but you had mentioned that a lot of us have been there as well. And I think in saying that, it's important to remember for those that are listening that are preceptors, that you don't give up on somebody just because they haven't had the right attitude for a while. Or, if you have somebody like a Joe Hill that walks in the door as a new nurse and he's just there for the money, that, I mean, look at where you are today. And had that preceptor given up on you and just said, I don't want to deal with this, this person's in nursing for the wrong reason, well, you wouldn't be here today. And I was an ER educator for a while, and I'd have nurses come in and shut the door and say, I need to talk to you about this person. I don't think they're going to make it. And the kind of final result that we would always try to come to is we want to give them the tools that they need to make it. And whether they choose to a different path or they choose something out of the emergency department, I don't want to, at the end of the day, say that I caused them to be there. I want to give them every tool that they needed to succeed and help them succeed in every way I can. And if they don't succeed, then that's another thing. But if they do, then look at the win that we achieved because of giving them the right tools. And whoever your preceptor was, I think they definitely had a win. So thank you, Joe. It's been great, great chatting with you about that because I do think it's important. There's a lot of people, especially now with young preceptors, a different workforce. You have charge nurses that have been in a role for 4 or 5 months and suddenly they're the charge nurse. There's a lot of professional immaturity in some ways. And I think not giving up on some of these people, giving them an opportunity, being patient with them, can do a lot for the industry.
I think the other side of that is reinvent yourself. If you're at a point where you hate going to work and you just can't do it anymore. Thankfully, medicine is so broad. There are so many other options. I think a lot of people are just afraid to take that leap. But I have never reinvented myself or restarted a new job and regretted it. That's the good thing is there's so many options out there. And I kind of did that with, I mean, 19 years in any role. I won't say I was burnt out, but it's to a point where you're like, all right, it's time. Let's do something different. Let's mix it up. It was a bigger mix than I thought it was going to be, but still ended up finding something that I truly enjoy doing. So, yeah, step out on the ledge a little bit would be my advice.
Got a lot of great advice for us, Joe. Been a lot of what I like to call morsels or nuggets along the way in this podcast, things that someone's listening to this and they're like, gosh, I'm just maybe in a tough place, whether that be with someone they're precepting, someone they're mentoring, themselves personally. There's a lot of things that have been said that you've brought up and talked about that can just be seen as like, hey, I hear you, I see you, I was you, and there's still hope. There's still hope out there. You can and you will. You just got to make the decision. So, honestly, I can't wait to re-listen to this episode. I'll probably take away a few more things from it as
Yeah,
well.
people are putting off taking one of their BCEN exams, right? I can't tell you the number of times we had people putting off taking their CFRN, CEN, all that stuff. Take it. Just go take the exam. Study for it, obviously, because they're not give-me's, that's for sure. But go take the exam.
Step up,
Same
challenge
thing.
yourself a little bit. You might actually surprise yourself with what you're able
Exactly.
to do when you get out of that comfort zone. Talking to myself, even. Here we go. I get the pleasure of asking a few rapid fire questions. They're really just so we can get to know you a little bit better. If there was a career outside of healthcare that you'd like to try, what would it be?
All right, please don't throw darts at me. Probably an attorney, because I'm told I like to argue a lot, but maybe an attorney, circus clown, something. I don't, yeah, something completely different. So
Are you saying that they're similar, Joe?
they're close. I don't know which one pays more. I know which one would be more fun, but so
Shots fired, Joe. Shots fired.
yeah.
But honestly, when I was in high school, I did some mock trial stuff, and I sure liked that Discord. Man, I had a
Yeah.
lot of fun with that kind of stuff. I'd be like, oh, really? Well, what about this? So thankfully, I just use that in my personal life. So,
There you go.
so three categories. Here's your favorite. And again, this can be your favorite all time, or this can be just something you're into right now that you'd recommend. Favorite book.
Favorite most recent book is probably Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. Definitely worth a listen. He was a hostage negotiator, and to hear how he takes that knowledge and uses it in business negotiations and just everyday life is, it's pretty amazing. I mean, it's a great listen, and I usually listen to books. I don't sit down and actually read them, but great audiobook. Really liked listening to that. And there's actually a kind of a second chapter to that that came out about a year ago. That's also excellent. But he does lectures across the country as well. I've never had the chance to actually sit in on one, but I'm wanting to do that at some point.
Well, I have written that down. All right. Favorite movie, TV show, or it can be a binge-worthy series.
I rewatch stuff a lot, probably like The Office. I rewatch that all the time. And I don't know. I think I just turn it on so I don't have to think because I've seen it so many times. So it's just kind of like background noise for me, but it probably have to be The Office.
I actually yesterday was talking about Michael Scott and Prison Mike. It was just that I'm like, it's just classic. It's classic. And it's absolutely something you can turn on and just be like, I'm just going to chill out. 30 minutes of hilarity, but not a lot of heavy, you know, not a lot of heavy. All right. Favorite musical artist, again, all time, or what you're currently listening to?
Oh man, I got a lot. Probably either Eminem or Dr. Dre.
Classic. One of my friends, she's really into Eminem. She knows like all the lyrics, and I don't have quite the space in my brain at this moment, but I am dedicated to learning at least a few more of his songs, lyric for lyric. I do know a few, but there's just he's a great lyricist. I
Yeah,
mean,
pretty wordy. It'd be hard to
there's
memorize
a
too much
lot
of it,
there. There's
yeah.
a lot there.
So,
All right. What is your self-care go-to? Or a hobby outside of healthcare that just kind of helps you reset.
I like to travel. I like to be outside. It's almost swimming season. I love to swim. I mean, as soon as I get off work, that's the first thing I do is head to the pool. So I can't wait for it to be warm enough to do that.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing all that with us. If our audience would like to follow you online, what social media platforms are you on?
LinkedIn would probably be the best one. Joseph-Hill-789-37951. So that's the best place to hit me up.
We will include that in our blog for this episode.
Well, Joe, it's been really great meeting with you today and talking with you. We don't typically say this on the recording of the date we have recorded it, but we are actually recording this on Certified Nurses Day. And I think you're a great example of a great certified nurse. I think you have a lot to be proud of. And I really appreciate you taking the time to share that with each of us. And I think pushing yourself outside of your comfort level in flight nursing into a new nurse practitioner role, but then still seeing how that impacts emergency medicine and being able to connect those together is really important. And it's just been a great time having a conversation with you. So thank you for sharing everything with us today.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, I'm looking at my original certification date. It's been, what was that, 2008. So yeah, been a while. Definitely encourage people to do that. I won't say it was an easy test, but I wish I had done it sooner. That was the thing I walked away with is I dreaded it. I prepared for it, but I was like, man, I should have done that earlier.
Well, I want to take this time to thank Joe for joining us for this episode of BCN and Friends. Thank you, Joe, for sharing your experience, your expertise, your knowledge. It's inspiring to hear about the difference you're making in this new role within primary care and how you're impacting outcomes, you're implementing improvements to keep patients out of the ED and having a healthier quality of life. All I can say is keep up the great work. We appreciate you. And to all of our listeners, we hope you will stay tuned as we continue with BCN and Friends and bring you new, meaningful content and perspectives. If you have a suggestion for an episode, please email us at bcn@bcn.org. I'm Holly Briggs, here with Michael Dexter, and on behalf of the entire BCN team, we thank and celebrate you for all that you're doing as professional nurses across the emergency spectrum. Until next time, we are out.